This episode of AVXL was recorded on February 8th, 2018. Welcome to the Internet of Things, people, subwoofers, phase versus polarity, ESPN's new online service, and so much more.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and audio gear. No matter what your budget is, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Herron.
I am excited.
Me too, man. The Olympics have started. Olympic Games currently happening right now.
I'm like rebuilding the whole over-the-air antenna and over-the-air DVR so I can actually see the Olympics this year.
Because nice, man.
Last Winter Olympics, we were relying on sort of YouTube clips, and it was the worst collection of, I think this moment will go viral. Let's put this on the YouTubes.
I'm fortunate to have access to the NBC Sports app. So at the very least, I can do all the watching replays, live content, and even some VR, really. If you can access that. And my burning question of the day really was, if you had a subscription like PlayStation View or Sling TV or any of the other services that can provide that OTT experience, can you use that login to access NBC Sports? And my initial assumption would be no, but if anybody is able to do that, please let me know. I would like to know, because that app actually does make it quite nice to get to watch it live,
right,
or to catch the replay, or to focus on specific events you might want to see. And it actually works pretty well. No 4K, none, but,
well, you know,
at least through that app.
4K is a fad. Maybe they're just pissed off about really the several dollars they expended in 3D cameras.
Ugh.
And as a result, they have no interest.
Well, they're doing the VR. So if you want to get a little VR action through, I imagine, your cell phone style VR, that's there. I'm just hoping for at least they're sending this signal over their app in glorious, hopefully 1080p.
Hopefully 1080p.
We'll see. We'll see when I get some more eyeballs on it. But yeah, curling and ski jumping already happening.
We got to stop. Because
yeah?
I got to watch curling.
There you go, man.
I don't think you really understand my relationship to curling. No one.
Get that NBC Sports app, and you might catch some of it. Or, according to an Ars Technica article, there are really only three ways you're going to see any of the Olympic coverage in 4K. And that's, well, if you have Comcast, DirecTV, or Dish. And only Comcast is providing an on-demand 4K viewing experience,
mm-hmm,
if you have their X1 DVR. A basic cable plan starting at $70 a month, and probably some surcharge related to 4K access as part of your plan. Now, last time around for the Olympics, there was a smart TV app for LG and Samsung TVs that would deliver some of that similar coverage to those specific TVs that had their 4K UHD support built right in. That app appears to have vanished. I was searching for it pretty frantically this morning, just trying to see if if it was there or if it's... Anyway, it seems gone. So, yeah.
Oh, Canada held on for the win over Team USA in mixed doubles curling.
It's a beautiful thing.
You know what's even better? There's a full 1 hour and 55-minute replay on stream.nbcolympics.com of the entire USA-Canada match. This is so much better than the last Olympics. I'm actually now excited about this.
Good. I will say, though, it seems that at least if you're not getting the on-demand viewing for 4K, but DirecTV and Dish seem to be clearer about how and what hardware and other factors that will be required for you to be able to view this content. And that's going to be pretty cool. So,
yeah, I may actually be getting excited about this again. It was so frustrating last time.
Disappointed that, of all people... This should have been the 4K Olympics for viewing experiences. Live 4K. I'll have to age myself a little more and wait till the next games, apparently. Summer games.
Well, it would be
2020 or whenever.
You know, seeing Shaun White attempt to make his big comeback in 4K, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that 4K was invented for.
I would just like it live.
Yeah.
Just live 4K UHD coverage, especially of the opening event, because of the colorful nature.
Yeah.
Of that, and that beautiful wide color palette available with 4K encoding. Anywho,
oh my goodness,
the high speed cameras look awfully cool. I will say they are using those amazing 4K cameras. They're shooting the events with. They can do some sick slow mo. So that's good stuff.
So when there is 4K, it will be awesome.
Oh, yeah. When?
When?
The great question.
We love your questions. We want more of your questions. So fire your questions out to Ask at AVXL. Another news subject that kind of caught my eye was ESPN's finally launching their subscription streaming service, $4.99 a month.
Okay.
You don't get excited because it's none of the stuff ESPN thinks is worth putting on cable.
And they're glorious 720p broadcasts that I wish would die and go away.
Let's let's not even go down that rabbit hole because then the rage will be palpable to even people listening far, far away. Rico's got a nice article on it. Essentially, you know, they never said they were going to put any of their stuff on cable because they make their money from the cable companies, or I should say put their stuff on streaming. So it's curious to watch, like, you know, large media companies play around with how can we make money off of the interwebs without upsetting the money we make in other places. But
I'm wondering if I have an ESPN app on my phone. I do an awful lot of sports streaming through apps that you can apply to a mobile device and then have that connect to your local device connected to your TV or to the TV directly. And I don't believe I use any of the ESPN stuff, so to speak. I do have a little well, I guess I can delete the NFL app at this point.
At which point, this is not ESPN.com/watch, and it's not some bundled thing.
That
I've service. Used. This is the actual, spring 2018 streaming service they've been puttering around with for a long time. And the reason it's got so much cover this week is because Disney finally revealed the pricing on it at $4.99 a month. Did you, I'll talk about it later in what we watch.
You know, the pricing's right. We'll just see what kind of content they're actually going to be providing, so... Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. DirecTV's got upgrades coming if you're a DirecTV consumer. Or as AT&T's CEO said, we're very bullish on video. That's Randall Stephenson, AT&T's chairman, president, and CEO.
Funny coming from AT&T.
Yeah, it is kind of funny coming from AT&T.
The slowest internet. One of the very slowest internet providers here in North America.
Oh, my goodness.
Ridiculously horrible DSL service.
Not that we're bitter about that. Apparently, this is the bitter episode, the angry episode.
Crap is crap, man.
Fortunately, DirecTV is... it's funny, right? Because they've been working on a 4K Android TV-powered streaming device. First evidence of that showed up in FCC filings last fall. Basically, it sounds like they're finally going to be upgrading their boxes.
Yeah, so. Considering how often I've had to reboot those boxes for clients, I'm really hoping the new one is a little more stable.
March 19th, apparently. The quote from the multichannel.com article, new home-centric streaming device that will repurpose the company's traditional linear TV platform. Although I guess it's probably AT&T's one there. In any case, they're going to be adding a cloud DVR, an additional stream. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's
trying to catch up to Comcast and their Xfinity platform.
Oh my goodness!
Man, there's pretty much anything you want to do on that platform.
Remember when DirecTV was ahead with 1080p?
Oh yeah,
and then came 4K.
Honestly, DirecTV is probably one of the best 4K providers in terms of actually providing things you can watch in a live format.
Point taken.
And I would say Dish is probably second. I think it's just easier for the satellite guys to deploy this stuff to their entire user base at once because it is being delivered by cable. And as long as you have the end hardware that's compatible, it'll work. And if you have the appropriate packages, of course. But there you go. Comcast's internet service, short of some of the third-party providers that you really never hear about in local areas, they can provide great internet experiences in terms of just speed and cost. But we live in this world where there aren't that many choices.
No.
And it's like one or two, if you're lucky, to get true broadband service, something greater than, say, at least 25 megabit.
Right.
So...
We promised to go a little in-depth on subwoofers this week, not just curling. I don't think we promised anything about curling. I just get excited about curling. And it's funny because, you and I were talking about subwoofers. I've been adding subwoofers to everything in my life. I got so enthusiastic, I got invited to join Michael O'Neill on Beginner Audiophile, which is a fun podcast for beginner audiophiles. The idea is like what Michael wants to do is he started getting into audio, and he's like, there's got to be something between crap that's being sold at a big box store and audio places that don't want to talk to me because I don't want to pay $50,000 for speakers.
Indeed.
And he started Beginner Audiophile. It's a fun podcast. I got to do an episode with him. But he called me back. He's like, who should I be looking at? I'm like, what? He's like, subwoofers. And So I've apparently been over the top with subwoofer lust or subwoofer, you know, excitement everywhere. And let's start with the super basics, right? If you go up on Wikipedia, a subwoofer or sub is a woofer or a complete loudspeaker, which is dedicated to the reproduction of low-pitched audio frequencies known as bass.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, I won't get too deep into the whole, like what is, like, you know.
Those low frequencies.
Yeah.
I consider that, I consider subs handling as much as possible anything, say, 200 hertz and below, generally speaking.
Yeah.
That's where, because, for one, it requires more energy the lower the frequencies go in order to produce those sounds. So if you're in a power limited environment or power limited hardware, trying to drive those lower frequencies to speakers that can't handle it ends up just wasting the power output of whatever amp you're using. So that's one aspect of it.
Right.
With the right assortment of speakers, including a subwoofer, you get a richer, fuller sound experience that you will not only feel more, but it will more accurately reproduce the original recording.
And a lot of the rhythm that it is in a recording is the bass, right? And you look at the Wikipedia entry for bass, and it's one of those awesome, nerdly kind of moments. Tones of low, also called deep frequency pitch and range from 16 to 256 hertz. That's C0 to middle C4. In musical compositions such as songs and pieces, these are the lowest parts of the harmony in choral music without instrumental accompaniment. The bass is provided by adult male bass singers. In an orchestra, the bass lines are played by the double bass and cellos, bassoon or contrabassoon, low brass such as the tuba and bass trombone, and the timpani or kettle drums. In many styles of traditional music, such as bluegrass, folk, and in styles such as rockabilly and big band and bebop jazz, the bass role is filled by the upright bass. In most rock and pop bands and jazz fusion groups, the bass role is filled by the electric bass. In some 20th and 21st century pop genres, such as 1980s pop, hip-hop music, and electronic dance music, the bass role may be filled with a bass synthesizer.
Oh, yeah.
So that basically tells you the subwoofer is to make those instruments, the lowest range of those instruments, have authority. And technically, the speaker driver is the subwoofer, but just about everybody calls, like, the box with the connections on the backs, or the box, you know, with the amplifier and the connections on the back, a sub or a subwoofer. Like Robert was saying before, the point of a subwoofer is to move a lot of air. Grand pianos, tubas, cellos, bass guitar cabinets, they tend to be bigger. They tend to, like, the bass guitar cabinet, you know, I remember sitting next to Mike Watt when I think he had like 3 15-inch Galleon Kruger cabinets underneath this big GK amplifier.
Right. Just simply compare speaker sizes. Tweeters can be an inch across, and they can be very high performance in terms of what they can deliver in that high frequency range. But when it comes to the low frequencies, it requires a large device to move that air in a way that's effective.
45 hertz from a bookshelf speaker with a 5 1/4-inch driver is impressive, right?
But if hell yeah, that would be.
You know, 50 hertz out of a bookshelf speaker is good. Adding a subwoofer and letting the subwoofer take everything from like 80 or 100 hertz down, if you love music, you'll thank me. Because it gives so much of the low end much more authority.
You mention this with the headphones all the time, but it's that roll-off. A lot of speakers will claim a range of performance. Say, headphones will say, oh, 20 hertz to 20,000.
Yeah.
But when you start getting to the edges of those frequency responses, it isn't linear in terms of, you know, the performance in the center, in terms of the volume you're going to get out of it versus that very end point, like getting down to 20 hertz. Sure, it may put out a tone, but the tone is going to be so reduced.
And that's the thing, right? Like
that it isn't effective.
I'm going to be gracious. Subwoofer specs, channeling my mother here, I'm going to say subwoofer specs tend to be generous. 20 to 50, 100, like it might say like 20 to 150 hertz.
Sure.
Sounds like a big chunk of bass, but if it's already rolled off 5 decibels at 40 hertz, you're not getting much. By 35 hertz, there's probably nothing there,
right?
For all intents and purposes, unless your head's smushed up against
exactly.
The cabinet.
You can hear a sound coming out of it, but it isn't going to be as effective or as punchy as it would have been, you know, when the roll-off isn't there at all.
What you want is, like, flat.
Yeah.
And 3 dB from 20 to 150 hertz is pretty flat. 1.5 dB from 20 to 150 hertz is a ninja, super awesome, epic subwoofer.
And honestly, if it can even get down into the 20s, high 20s even, 30, without tremendous roll-off, it is going to be an amazing listening experience.
And
so
let's talk about that. Like the whole idea, like, you know, you want 20 hertz to 20 hertz because it's a human range of his, you know,
of
listening,
subs.
Right? Yeah. and, you know, for movies, getting down to 20 hertz or below is awesome. But when you're looking at music, right, the lowest note on a bass cello is like 33 hertz, depending on the size of the tuba and the skill of the player. Like, you know, depending on which chart you're looking at, basically, a tuba is like 37 hertz or 31 hertz, although I understand that a particularly skilled, like, classical or jazz tuba player with a full-size B-flat tuba can hit something down around 25 hertz.
Perhaps notice, I need to step up my tuba listening.
You know,
I don't think I own any music with tubas in it, although I probably
do. You know, it was you know, the Preservation Hall jazz band, That's It, which is their compilation of their own creations. The opening on that has this monster tuba jam, and it got me thinking about tubas.
Tuba duel.
You know, but a four-string bass guitar, 31 hertz is the lowest notes. You know, lowest note on a piano is like 27.5 or 28 hertz, unless you're looking for like a Bergendorfer super grand piano, which you're probably not going to hear a lot of. Apparently those can get down to 16 hertz. I've read about crazy octo contra bass, like triple B flat clarinets that go down to 16 hertz. And of course synthesizers, right, they can generate incredibly low frequencies. And apparently, I got a little nuts in the research, the Hill organ in the Sydney Town Hall can hit 8.18 hertz on its lowest pipe. But seriously, by the time it's that low, you're feeling it. You're not hearing it.
Totally.
So assuming you don't listen to a lot of pipe organ music, particularly well-recorded pipe organ music, or 5 to 8 string bass music, or just live for big ass in-your-face bass, 25 to 30 hertz is probably going to do, like, 25 hertz is going to cover everything. 30 hertz is going to cover, like, most of everything
in
the world of
bass. With a 3 dB roll-off or less, that's going to be fine. That's going to be great for most people. That's getting up into the upper tier of subwoofer performance.
Yeah. So, you know, a subwoofer that goes lower is better. But one, you got to find out if those numbers are legit. And two, honestly, by the time you get below 25 hertz, it's there for explosions in movies more than most music.
Totally.
You know, a couple of personal faves. Shu Research, they make amazing subwoofers. Dr. Shu, it's a direct mail site out of Southern California, and he kind of keeps turning around and producing an amazing subwoofer with amazing specs for an amazing price, and then 2 or 3 or 4 years later, he'll do like the VTF1 Mark III. You know, they lowered the price, and, you know, it's now going down to, if you have two ports open, it has a very authoritative, very impacty 32 hertz. With one port open, it goes down to 22 hertz. You know, the crossover is anywhere between 30 and 90 hertz. But when you look at the frequency response charts on that, because they give you multiple ports so you can seal one or two ports, you know, and when you look at this, it's like 94 dB at 30 hertz, and it's down 1 dB at 25 hertz, and it's down 5 dB at 20 hertz. So that's pretty freaking impressive.
Very nice.
Because that's a $400 subwoofer.
Right. $369
subwoofer. You know, if you want to step up and
not get bargain basement at all.
No, but, well, if you think about
but
it, like,
great value compared to, you know, you can spend all you want on speakers.
And but also you can walk into a big box store and you can buy something that calls itself a subwoofer that barely exists under 40 hertz and pay just as much money. You know, you go to their VTF2 Mark V, which is $539, you know, and I've got a VTF2 that's 10 years old and the specs aren't this good, but the thing still does the job. You know, for $539, it'll take you down to 18 hertz. With one port open, it'll take you down to 16 hertz.
I find, too, even with soundbars, mm-hmm. even the relatively, especially cheap soundbars, even right. the relatively, you know, the subwoofers included with those that mm-hmm. offer them help a lot.
Yeah.
They are not, you know, linear down to 30 hertz or whatever. So, mm-hmm. And you shouldn't expect that, but you will definitely notice better reproduction of some of the booms and the bass notes in music and other things like that.
You know, if you go to the Wirecutter has a great article on a bargain subwoofer. And Brent Butterworth, who's probably tested more subwoofers than anybody alive right now, you know, if you got $100, buy the Monoprice 9723.
Totally. Or two.
Yeah. You can afford to, and you will have more bass in your room, and you will have fewer issues with standing waves. But it's going to add, I want to say, some pretty authoritative bass down to like 30 or 40 hertz.
That will relieve the other speakers to mm-hmm. be at their best and work within the frequency ranges that they're best optimized for, which typically isn't the lowest frequencies of the audio spectrum, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the, I want to say, where is it? In the deep bass from 20 to 31.5, it scored 99.3 dB on the CEA 2010 results. You know, in the mid bass from 40 to 63 hertz, it hit 115 dB. So obviously it drops off considerably, but there's still a fair amount of bass there.
If you're using smallish speakers in any kind of a surround sound system, or even a two-channel listening system, it's worth spending that at least the $100 on the monoprice sub. Mm-hmm. Just to fill in that part that the speaker's simply incapable of doing efficiently or properly.
If you have a tiny set of bookshelf speakers, you know, and a subwoofer output on your AVR, like, you know, set the speakers to small, set the crossover to 80,
and you're ready to scrap everything and start over. Well, wait, start with a sub first. Maybe that'll prevent you from just dropping major coin for the time being.
Yeah, another really amazing subwoofer that Brent and a lot of other reviewers, I want to say it was a pick from Sound and Vision and Audioholics, have nothing but love for RSL's Speedwoofer 10S, which sells for $400. They got a wireless transmitter option for it, and it delivers a huge amount of bass for the money, an incredible amount of bass for a 10-inch subwoofer. pardon me, I'm trying not to cough anymore, but apparently I still want to cough.
The Vegas plague continues.
The Vegas plague is still working its way out. It's got a really interesting design, but that one's like, you know, that's a $400 subwoofer that's 24 hertz to 200 hertz plus or minus 3 dB, which is pretty amazing. And it's supposed to be very musical. And that's something I want to mention is, I'm going to be blunt and say, you know, some subwoofers are better than others.
Of course.
As silly as that sounds.
Speaker design is everything.
Speaker design is everything. Like, the worst case in a subwoofer for me is if it's one notey because it has a port. Like, it's a ported subwoofer and there's like one note, let's say 43 hertz, that's like 5 dB louder than everything else. Yeah. And you're like, a bass line will be, it should be like, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. Bump, bump, but it's like ba bump, 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 bump. But it's not because the person played it that way, but because the subwoofer has a screwed up response. You know, you can have bass that's boomy, which is not good, sloppy, which is not good, that one notey effect I was just describing, or distorted because you're overdriving the subwoofer. If you have thoughts on subwoofers, questions about subwoofers, you're trying to figure out how to implement or integrate a subwoofer, lots we can talk about there. Brent's going to join us on the podcast in a few weeks.
And, oh, cool.
He's another good resource to talk about that stuff. But if you're running an AVR, it's almost painless to attach a subwoofer because you just need to plug, you know, the RCA cable output. If you have an integrated amplifier, you probably don't have a subwoofer output on it, although they're starting to become more common.
From most amps I look at, they're just featuring subwoofer outputs that require a powered subwoofer. And given the power requirements of
for AVRs, they are. Yeah. For a lot of stereo amplifiers, it's becoming more common, but it's still pretty rare.
Interesting. So don't fear a powered sub. And if anything, that helps relieve the load from an AVR anyway.
You almost invariably want a powered sub over a standalone sub because most people don't want to buy an extra amp to power their sub.
Right.
And most AVRs don't have the power to power a sub. And even if you have a nice amplifier that you like, you don't need... you don't need one with a built-in subwoofer output because most subwoofers, not all, but most subwoofers will allow you to run the speaker cables. Basically, you run the output. You basically run your speaker cables to the subwoofer. The subwoofer does the crossover, and then you run the remaining signal from the subwoofers out to your speakers, which requires a bunch more speaker cable. But you're buying monoprice speaker cable, you know, by the 100-foot spool.
12 gauge.
So an extra 20 feet is not going to be an emotionally... painful experience.
No.
Oh my goodness. Next week we're going to talk about phase versus polarity thanks to a viewer email discussing the whole phase versus polarity.
I was reading that this morning. That looked like a person filled with good knowledge that we should definitely ponder their words.
We will get deep on the phase and the polarity next week. Olympics. I'm now excited. I got 2 hours of USA versus Canada curling to watch. It is streaming openly on the internet. I rewatched The Martian and Sherlock Holmes. I
dig The Martian. I use the opening sequence, especially on 4K UHD TVs in the UHD Blu-ray format, for looking for banding artifacts and video processing characteristics. And it has some terrific panning shots that can reveal odd video processing and judder artifacts. Again, it's like I should probably pay more attention to the movies and turn the sound up a little bit once in a while rather than just simply staring at visuals. But that is one of the discs in my collection of discs that I use when I look at any TV. And it happens to be a pretty decent movie. It makes me smile. So
yeah, Guy Ritchie films are almost always fun.
Ah, Snatch. One of my absolute favorite movies of all time.
I think I've seen the movie 30 times.
Oh my goodness. So much to love.
And the same sort of frantic, frenetic, high energy editing and mayhem.
He did Sherlock Holmes?
He did the 2009 Sherlock Holmes.
Oh.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie.
Might have to take a look at that one. I don't think I saw it.
My goodness. Well, Robert Downey Jr. Plays Sherlock Holmes. Jude Law plays Watson. You know, Mark Strong plays the bad guy. Rachel McAdams plays the love interest. It's one of those things like Peaky Blinders where it's just fascinating to see, you know, this pre 20th century London, this 19th century London.
This week, all I had time for was just lots of YouTube binging whenever I had a moment.
The trick is to give up sleep. Oh, Solo. Have you seen the Solo trailer yet?
No.
I have no idea how to feel about it.
I saw whatever they basically presented for 10 seconds on the Super Bowl coverage.
Longer trailers.
Right. And considering I haven't seen any of these new Star Wars movies, I should probably get busy watching a few of those. So get caught up before I dive in to whatever this new Solo story is going to be.
You had a question. You were talking about OLED lighting, too.
One of the things, this goes back to my trip to Korea last week, and one of the things I had a chance to preview when I was at their OLED and LCD manufacturing plants near the border of North Korea in Paju, South Korea, was that they got into the discussion of OLED lights, and I didn't really think much of it at the time. Yeah, you can create a really cool piece of flexible material that can produce lighting very effectively at very high efficiencies. But one of the things that sort of struck me is, ooh, I didn't even think about that, was consider how Sony integrated their sound into an OLED with their A1E OLED, where literally they're vibrating the glass screen with actuators to create the front stereo channels. And then they use a small, what they call a sub, basically, to fill in some of the lower frequencies. But that ability to create sound from the glass itself and to have it come right from the glass. Well, if you make a piece of OLED lighting with that similar glass structure, why not just simply make it a speaker as well? So if you could think of maybe in the future that every lighting source you'll be seeing could become a speaker. That was one of those moments where I was just like, ooh, there's some interesting applications there in terms of combining technologies, at least. We'll see how well that can do for beyond, say, a PA system style quality. Maybe it can achieve something that could replace your ceiling speakers or something like that in a room. And I'm very, very curious to see where that's going and how they're doing it. And if they're still going to have to continue to use actuators or if they're going to be doing something else, maybe. And then just a quick follow-up as well. One of the things I forgot to mention, when I first landed in Korea, I was going through customs. And I have gotten pretty good at doing that over the years. And I immediately recognized that the person I first handed my passport to at passport control, he looked down at his screen and clearly saw something on the screen that shocked him or he had never seen before. And then he just pulls his head back, looks up at me, and gets this soft smile on his face like, oh, I'm so sorry for what's about to happen. Turns out I triggered some facial recognition system, and I apparently look like somebody they were after. And it took quite a few people and several scans of my face and several fingerprintings of me to finally correct all of that. But that was like for a first event going into a country. I think that would have made a few people pretty nervous, but I was dragged into a beautifully pristine brand new office, all white walls and very quiet. So... And it couldn't have been more polite. If you are ever caught up in some weirdness at the border, generally just relax, smile, and, you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But
run your eyes frantically towards your bag and start to sweat profusely.
Yeah, things not to do. Just
don't
chill.
Talk smack at a border guard.
But seriously, the initial control agent's poker face was terrible. And I was just like, oh my, even I was like, what did you just look at? Then he has to call his boss over. He looks at it and all of a sudden there's somebody standing right behind me. It's like, sir, would you come with me? We're going to go into this back room. It's like, I don't see anyone else having to do this.
I was coming back.
I had a similar oddity when I crossed from Shenzhen into Hong Kong. And I, again, it's just the best thing you can do is just smile and be polite and answer any questions needed.
The biggest hassle I've ever gotten was going to Canada once. And I guess I reminded the guy of somebody he went to high school with.
Oh, great.
You know, and he just kept grinding on me. And then he finally realized he just didn't have anything to work with and let me go. That's funniest one was coming back from Mexico. I think he was bored. And I reminded him of somebody he didn't like. Like, I don't know how else to describe it, you know.
Right.
But I remember coming back from the Baja 1000 one year. Or the San Felipe, whatever, coming back from Mexico after a desert race, whole back of my truck's filled with, like, parts.
Oh, yeah.
And
smuggler.
Tools. Yeah. And the guy looks at me, you know, at this point, I'm already, like, 30 years old. And he's like, you know, coming back with some, what did he say, steroids? You don't look like a big guy. You're bringing back steroids from Mexico? And I start howling. I'm like... You know, I'm like Sudafed I might want to come back with, but because I have sinus issues and I don't, you know, it's a pain in the ass to buy it up here. But like steroids, really? Do you know what a roid monster looks like? And the guy's like, you're not bringing anything in, are you? I'm like, no. But, you know, if you want to pull a half ton of tools out of the back of my truck to verify that fact, I respect your need, sir. And he's like, get out of here. I'm like, thank you.
That's too funny.
The roid one was one of the funniest ones.
I'm smuggling roids.
Yeah, it's me. Roid smuggler.
Oh, that's too funny. So, people, facial recognition, it isn't perfected. That's all I have to say. No. I wish they could tell me who it was they were looking for.
They're putting it into glasses for police officers
to use
in
China. I saw that. That's happening in China. They got to make it more efficient. They have 4 times the population of the U.S., man.
Technically, when we're not talking about steroids, facial recognition, or the possibility of Robert or I going to jail at the border, this is a podcast about home theater and audio technology. We enjoy, in fact, we rely upon your questions and comments to guide the show. Ask at avxl.com, tweet at avxl, or tweet at Robert Heron or at Patrick Norton, and we are funded. The only way we make money is through Patreon. Patreon.com/AVXL is the place to join the crew that makes the show possible. Please head on over there and make a discreet monthly donation. Become a patron.
That keeps us from
a subscriber, if you
jamming
will.
Your ear holes full of ads and other perhaps unwanted discussions.
Jamming your ear holes. That sounds so attractive.
Or ear balls. However you want to put it.
Yeah, you've been importing roids again, haven't you?
Your balls!
With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I am Robert Heron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.